I'm very happy to welcome to our program Richard D. Wolf, professor of economics at New School University's graduate program in international affairs. He's authored many books, including Capitalism's Crisis Deepens, Essays on the Global Economic Meltdown, 2010 to 2014. And Professor Wolf, known to many of you as the host of the weekly radio program Economic Update, heard all across the country and here on WPKN Fridays at 7:30 p.m. Professor Wolf, great to have you on the show again. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Scott. Glad to be here.
So we're really glad that you can be here this evening, one day after we got the results of the French presidential election, which was won by centrist and neophyte politician, former investment banker, economy minister under outgoing president, François Hollande, and that's Emmanuel Macron. And he won the election in the second round of the polling over proto-fascist candidate Marine Le Pen of the National Front Party by 66% to 34%. Quite a convincing victory. But a lot of people, of course, in France and outside of France are asking questions about, the economic conditions in France and many European nations that propelled this right-wing populist candidate, Marine Le Pen, and her long-standing National Front Party that has never fared so well in the history of French politics. So, Professor Wolf, I wonder, as we begin here, maybe you can provide some context for understanding what's going on in France. And certainly there are a lot of commonalities between the economic issues confronting the French people and what we're confronting here in the United States that in many ways resulted in this election last November of Donald Trump.
Yes, I'd be glad to. It's sort of difficult to know exactly where to start. France has been, like the United States, for many decades now, a kind of political football between a center-to-the-right political party, not so different from our Republicans, and a center-left party in France called the Socialist Party, which is rather like our Democratic Party in terms of their respective policies. And they've exchanged presidences and prime ministers back and forth with very little change in the basic economic structure of the country. That might have been okay in those decades when people either thought or kind of fantasized that their economic situations were secure, that France would grow economically, and they'd be all okay. Unfortunately, over the last 20, 30 years, in France, as in so much of Europe and in the United States, a vast part of the population, who's best described as the working class, some of whom earn quite nicely, many of whom earn somewhere in the middle, and a growing number of whom are having a hard time making ends meet, that part of the population, which is a very large part, is increasingly being left out, cut short, hurt, to be blunt, economically, and they're not happy with the Republicans and Democrats, or in France, the right wing and the left wing center parties. And so what you see in the elections in the United States for Trump, or in England for Brexit, and now in France, is a huge part of the population beginning to look for ways to express their dissatisfaction, their dislike, their refusal to continue to accept political leaders that are unwilling to deal with the failure of the capitalist systems in these countries to provide a secure, let alone growing economic well-being for an huge part of the population. I mean, to give you just the real hard numbers in France, if you add up all the eligible voters, and the French have a fairly long tradition of having much higher turnouts in their elections than we do, but if you take all of them that were eligible to vote, Mr. Macron, the winner, got 43% of the eligible French voters to vote for him. So he didn't get anywhere near a majority. But if you add to that, as you must, the fact that at least a quarter to a third of the vote he did get was in no way a vote for him, as the people said on their way out of the polls, but a vote against Marine Le Pen, the right wing, as you put it, quasi or partly fascist kind of candidate, then Mr. Macron becomes the president of France with a stunningly weak performance, with a stunningly small part of the French population having any enthusiasm or any support for what he represents. And there should be no surprise about this, because he was an economy minister in the previous government of socialist François Hollande, which came into power promising the French working class that it would stop austerity, that it would reverse the policies of the conservative government and build a new economy for France by helping the people in the middle and the bottom, betrayed all of that, became so unpopular that Mr. Hollande could not run for re-election as he had originally planned to do, drove Mr. Macron to be so frightened about the future of a political association with Mr. Hollande that he quit the Socialist Party, set up his own party, and ran this election. This is a sign of a society that is very fast polarizing. And one-third of the votes went for Ms. Le Pen, and she's very clearly based her entire pitch on being France number one, sort of like Trump's America number one, or make America great again. She's viciously anti-immigrant in every way and has been for a long time, scapegoating and blaming immigrants who are not, of course, the cause of the difficulties of French capitalism, to say the least. That's her shtick. Luckily, a large part of France is not willing to do that yet, but they are very dissatisfied with what exists. And having elected Mr. Macron, they have literally put into office a person they have already, in a big majority, said is of no interest and of no importance to them. And on the contrary, they disagree with everything he says and has done for most of his short political career. So this is a highly destabilizing event in French politics and will disrupt and destabilize Europe even more than it already is.
Thank you for that excellent summary, Professor Wolf. I wonder if you would speak to the candidacy of French presidential candidate in the first round of the election. And that was Jean-Luc Mélenchon. He was a long-running political figure in France who's of the left, formerly the Socialist Party, but really struck a chord in the election. And in the last week or so of the election, really kind of spiked, didn't make his way to the second round, but came very close. And his prescription for the economic ailments of France were gaining some traction. Tell us a little bit about Mr. Mélenchon and his prescription for change in France that might be useful not only for the French people, but for people across Europe and even the United States.
Yes, I would be glad to. Jean-Luc Mélenchon was an extremely successful politician. He probably is best equated with Bernie Sanders here in the United States in a number of ways. At the beginning of his race, the pundits and the press said, oh, he'd get the usual 2 or 3% of the vote, pretty much what was said about Bernie Sanders. All that proved incorrect. When the first round of this French presidential election, which occurs in two rounds, happened, four candidates were in a very few percentage points of one another. Between 20 and 23 or 24 points, all four of them came in. That's Le Pen, Macron, Fillon, and Mélenchon, those four. And of those, Mélenchon is the left winger, the Bernie Sanders. He wants to tax rich people in France. He wants to use the money to provide jobs for the mass of people, all kinds of jobs, whether in the private or the public sector. He's perfectly willing to have the public sector be a major employer to rebuild the French economy from the bottom up rather than from the trickle on down from the top. So as I say, he's very similar to Bernie Sanders, but the difference was because he could run all the way through, he didn't have a primary situation, he showed that he was within a very few percentage points of everybody else who was running, including Le Pen and Macron. And in fact, you could go even a step further. When the Socialist Party kind of committed political suicide under Hollande by promising to reverse austerity and then being the administrator of austerity instead, it led not only to Mr. Hollande not running for re-election, basically quitting, but it meant that the Socialist Party in large part collapsed, and what was left of it was the far left wing of the Socialist Party. And they nominated a candidate named Hamon. He only got, last I looked, I think 6 or 7% of the vote. But he's actually quite close to Bernie Sanders in his perspective, too. And if you put together the two serious left wing candidates, Mélenchon and Hamon, then together they got more votes than either Macron or Le Pen got in the first round. So had they been able to get together, they weren't, but had they been able to get together, then the left-wing candidate would have been one of the two in the voting yesterday. That's how close the French population is split. But in terms of this new government, an overwhelming majority have neither confidence nor support nor any history of wanting neither this gentleman, Mr. Macron, nor the politics he represents, which is, again, a sign of the massive discontent and disaffection of the French people with the political class that has governed them for the last 30 or 40 years, and which they really don't want anymore, and are making that more and more clear. What's not so clear is whether they will go to the right to look for a better alternative or go to the left. But what we've now just seen is that they are certainly raising that as the fundamental question that's going to agitate French politics for the next period.
We're speaking with Professor Richard D. Wolff here on Counterpoint this evening, professor of economics at New School University's graduate program in international affairs and author of many books, including Capitalism's Crisis Deepens, Essays on the Global Economic Meltdown, 2010 to 2014. And Professor Wolff, I wanted to ask you about, there are many issues that are going to be confronting President-elect Macron as he takes office. Among them is 10% unemployment across France. He has during the campaign committed to implement economic reforms, including reforming pension laws, cutting public sector jobs, reducing corporate taxes, changing labor laws, viewed I think by many as a way to reduce labor rights, and streamline employer regulations. And all of this, he says, is a way to make France more competitive. And these types of policies are something we've heard quite a bit here in the United States and other places, particularly in Europe. What's your response to Macron and his prescription to revive France's economy here? What do you think of it?
Well, I think it's a disaster. I think it is the same line of proposals that we got from Mr. Sarkozy, who was the last president of France on the political right. It is the same thing that the Socialist Party president Hollande has been doing in the last bunch of years. It didn't work for Sarkozy. It didn't work for Hollande. I see absolutely no reason as an economist to believe it's going to work now. I think we are old enough and wise enough to be able to recognize that when a politician and a businessman tell you that they're going to make your economy more competitive, that is simply verbiage whose real message is we're going to make France an attractive place for people to come and invest by making labor cheap, by making the rules favor business, by making it clear that if a French person is lucky enough to have a job, it won't be secure, it won't have benefits associated with it that it did in the past. You know, this is the attempt to salvage a declining European economy by making it less, how shall I put it, by making it more attractive to imagine to stay in France because you don't want to move to China, since that's always a little bit dicey. But the Chinese make it attractive by having very low wages and a very low standard of living relative to the West. And so what you're saying is the only way we can compete is to become more and more like the Chinese or the Indians or the others, particularly in Asia, but also in Africa and Latin America. And so what you're really saying to the working class is our plan is to give you a lower standard of living, to keep lowering it until there's enough jobs at the lower standard that we're not hemorrhaging jobs to other parts of the world where standards of life and wages are even lower than they are here. This is a program that offers the working class an endless vista of decline and loss. And my guess is you're going to see more and more turbulence, more and more conflict in France as elsewhere in Europe as the working classes figure out that this is what's being planned for them and then have to ask themselves, why in the world are we voting into power people whose proposals to solve the problems of our country are taking it out of us? Rather than the wealthiest parts of the society, rather than reorganizing the business community so it isn't driven by profit, but rather by what's good for the nation, this is a very dangerous path that Mr. Macron has shaped out. And being as weak as he is with a party that's, you know, a few months old and has no roots in France, he is undertaking a very controversial policy with very little support. My guess is he's not going to get very far.
Professor Wolf, I wanted to ask you, in the context of Europe as a whole, we've seen movements that have rebelled against the orthodox economic policies of what's often called the Troika, the European Commission, European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund. And these movements consist of Syriza in Greece, Podemos in Spain, other movements in Portugal, the Five Star Movement in Italy to some extent. What's your prediction here in terms of Europe's economy, people's dissatisfaction with where it's headed, and some challenges which may in the long run succeed to change where Europe is headed and their rejection of even basic Keynesian economics?
Well, I think what you're seeing is that, and I'll focus on one dimension. It's not the only thing, but it'll get the idea across. More and more European producers, like American producers, are leaving the countries in which they grew up as industries and moving production to cheap wage areas, as I said, in China or India or Asia or Africa or Latin America and places like that, leaving behind decimated cities, sort of the European equivalents of what we here have as Detroit or Camden, New Jersey or Cleveland, Ohio, and so on, these abandoned industrial centers that the system does not seem to know how to rescue, let alone how to make use of, involving millions of individual tragedies. All of this is playing out across Europe and making people angrier and angrier. So far, it has taken the form of thumbing your nose at the establishment. That's why when the entire British establishment told the British people to vote to keep Britain in Europe, the British working class thumbed their nose and said, no, we're voting the other way. That's why you had a third of the French voters vote for Le Pen. That's why Americans voted for Trump, despite his being the naughty boy and all the rest. What the left doesn't have is a clear notion of an alternative. The weakness of the oppositions, the Syrizas, the Podemos, Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party, they don't yet have, and they haven't yet agreed, what it is exactly they offer to the mass of the working class. So what you have is, in a sense, half the cake. You don't have the whole cake. In order to win the mass of people to you, you have to not only express, which they do already, the horror, the opposition to the failed policies of the rich, who are making money off moving their production to cheap parts of the world, so they think modern capitalism is working just fine for them, and they basically don't care what it does to the mass of their fellow citizens. So the mass of those citizens are already on the left or on the right. They hate the establishment. But what they don't have yet is a clear notion of where they can go, what they can do, how you could reconstruct an economy that would provide them with the standard of living, with the security, with the benefits for themselves and their children, so that they have something to fight for. You can't build a politics that's only against what's happening, even if that is horrible. That's simply not enough. And I think that what will be crucial over the next year or two is for the various parts of the European and American left to begin to gather around a set of proposals, what they will do if they have the political power to change the system so it serves the mass of people better. And I predict to you that the minute the left gets that, even if we don't all agree with it, it will become 10 times more powerful as a social force sweeping the modern world than anything we have seen before. By the way, this bedevils the left, too. One of the reasons Marine Le Pen couldn't do better is that beating up on immigrants, denouncing and demonizing immigrants, that's not a solution to your problem. And to make the case that if you got rid of all the immigrants, everything would be much better is so far-fetched an argument that the mass of people, thankfully and rightfully, see that that's not really a solution either. However irritated they might be by immigrant communities, it's just not a way of solving the big problems of a society, which go far beyond anything having to do with immigrants, and the same is true here in the United States.
Well, Professor Wolf, we only just have a couple of minutes left, but I wondered if you'd lay out for us your concern that if the economic and political elites in Europe and the United States don't make some major changes in reversing rising income inequality in the U.S. and Europe, that you're going to inevitably see the rise of the right, as we've already found to be true in the United States and Europe, and that at some point they could become a dangerous threat and undermine democratic institutions across the globe. What is your concern here about the economic elites and how, what they understand or don't understand about this threat that I think a lot of us have seen and now understand quite clearly?
Well, I think in general the ruling groups in the United States and Europe are making so much money, which they are, by cashing in on the very problems that they're causing the rest of their citizens by moving production to low-wage areas so they can make more profits, that they are completely in denial. They are blind. They are doing real well. It's the 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%. They live luxuriously. They have an army of servants of one kind or another to take care of them. They're not going to change what they're doing because they're making out like bandits, which is basically what they are. So I expect nothing to change in that way. Therefore, I expect the instability and the inequality to continue as it has uninterruptedly in the last 25, 40 years. And that means we're going to provoke mass dissatisfaction. I am of the opinion that that could go either to the left or to the right. If the left remains as divided and unclear about where it's going to take society, then it will mostly go to the right, and that's already happening, and that frightens a lot of people, and that's probably a good thing. But it leaves the basic question unresolved, which is, what do you do about out-of-control capitalism that has no brakes anymore, that doesn't have enough of the people with a broader sense of what's going on, so it is sort of hell-bent on making more money and continuing along the same lines that it has always functioned, and lets the chips fall where they may? Under these circumstances, the left has got to focus itself on becoming the potent force it could be by getting clear where it's going, or else the alternative will be growing turbulence, growing social conflict, and the rise of the right, because the left doesn't offer the mass of disgruntled people a way forward.
Well said. Thank you so much, Professor Wolf. We'll look forward to the next time we have you here, and then we'll mention that you're one of the featured speakers at the Left Forum this year in New York City at John Jay College in Manhattan, and that takes place June 2nd to June 4th, I believe.
Yes,
and
those are the dates.
The theme is resistance, but you want to say a quick word about the Left Forum coming up?
Yes, it's the largest annual gathering of activists and academics who are trying to build a new left here in the United States that can be a credible alternative to Mr. Trump, that can build on Occupy Wall Street and Bernie Sanders' remarkable achievements, and that's now a real possibility. So I would encourage anyone who might be interested, come on down to New York, meet the 4,000 to 5,000 people that gather at this event. It's a wonderful chance to see what the left is in all its diversity.
Wonderful. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you there, Professor Wolf. Thanks so much. Okay. For making time for us tonight.
Thank you, Scott, and I look forward to the next time we can talk.
Excellent. Thanks. Good night. That's Professor Richard Wolf, Professor of Economics at New School University's Graduate Program in International Affairs. His weekly program, Economic Update, can be heard across the country and here on WPKN on Fridays, 7:30 p.m.